Welcome to So Many Bits. I'm your host, Bill Nielsen, and joining me from this episode is nobody. Yeah, this week we're doing a recap of a recent playtest night that took place here in Chicago at Logan Theater. I had the chance to attend a couple years ago, had to skip last year due to attending PAX Unplugged, but I'm back now, and I got a chance to meet with a bunch of great people who are working on new video games and board games that are either, some of them are still in school at local universities around here. They go to DePaul, or they go to Columbia College in Chicago, or they're just out of school, or we even had a professor from Columbia there. And I got to talk to a whole sampling of these different people. First up here, we've got the team Furious Fish Friends. They have a game, Sashimi Slammers. I got to try it a time or two ago at a different Bit Bash events here, but this was my first chance to actually talk to the team face-to-face, so I was really glad to meet most of them here and get some questions in. There's fighting games out there, there's fishing games out there, but there are very few fighting fish games, and I was able to stop by and see Sashimi Slammers here. Can I hand this around clockwise in the circle, and just you can and just introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Kaylee. I'm the producer and also a UI artist for the game.
Hello, I'm Zach. I'm in charge of all the physical controller stuff and a good chunk of code, because lead programming. Hell yeah.
Hi, I'm Eric. I am the audio guy doing composition and sound effects, sound design, all that stuff for a game.
And hi, I'm Tomas, and I'm a big boy programmer, and I'm in charge of making sure the camera does the right thing.
What came first, the idea for the controller or the idea for the game? And I'm just going to hold the mic in the center here, and anyone can just kind of chime in as needed.
All right, so truth be told, the idea for the game came first, and it originally came from a class over at DePaul, which we all went to, where the only limitation was we had 2 buttons to work with, and I guess technically 10 weeks to do it. But we said, nah, we did it in 10 days, and in those 10 days, we were like, hey, let's get weird. Let's find some fish controllers. Well, let's make some fish controllers out of things I found in my room, and now we're here.
Now, is it tough keeping the controllers in good condition? Because, like, for people who haven't seen the game, you have to punch a fish to move or attack. Is it tough keeping them from not breaking from being punched all the time?
So, the original ones, which were pretty much just made out of cardboard and tinfoil inside of a fish, those were very hard to upkeep, because all the wires and tinfoil never really play nice together because tinfoil is cheap. But the newer setup where everything's more button-based or pressure sensor-based, depending which one you're playing, those ones are holding up a little bit better, at least in my experience so far with testing it, only because it's a little bit less ragged in how hard you actually have to push it for it to reach. But past that, if they die, we still got spare fish to switch mop.
As much as I'd like to see a pair of fish controllers in every home, I'd imagine that you're looking to bring this to another platform at some point down the line. Do you have an idea of where that would be going, like to phones or to PC or ... question mark?
So technically it is on PC, and it's always been on PC because the original format were keyboard controls, and technically we have a build out there for both PC and Mac if you ever want to play it for free. Our quote-unquote beta build. As for, I guess, arcade scene, we're going to just keep it the way it is right now, maybe make a bigger machine. And then for mobile, we're actually looking into it. The only problem right now is we all have to learn how to network code. That's a pain in the ass. As for mainstream consoles, it's always a possibility, but the biggest thing would be trying to work out if they'd accept custom controllers to work with their devices. So that's on a way back burner somewhere in the future.
Now you're all, you said you were at DePaul. Are you all presently at DePaul, or have you graduated?
Most of them are still at DePaul. Me and our fifth member, who's right now working in Seattle, we graduated this year. So, yeah.
And you're looking to keep the team together for the foreseeable future?
Yeah.
I'm seeing lots of nods.
Yeah.
Yeah. For the most part, yeah. I mean, always go wherever the wind takes you. Go find jobs where you can. but that's what Discord and the internet's for.
I think the beauty of our industry is lies in that we can work from anywhere and make things happen. You know, it's like we're not confined to an office space or to one physical location. It's just we can work from anywhere.
Now, the game may not be for sale yet, but I'm wondering, where can I buy a jacket? There, you get, everyone here has these awesome windbreaker jackets with sashimi slammers on the lapel, on the
pocket area of the jacket. Yeah. So the jackets we've actually been asked about one or two times. The jackets I bought on Amazon for the whole team, and then I have a family friend who owns like a heat press kind of shindig going on, so I just pulled a favor and was like, hey, can you do this? But if enough people show enough interest for jackets, then maybe we'll start mass producing those bad boys.
We are working on a marketing campaign. It's going to go viral very soon, so we're going to see where that takes us.
You heard it here, folks. It is confirmed. There is a viral marketing campaign forthcoming. No, I'm hearing yes, 100%. Yes, we do.
Kaylee is in charge of that.
It's going to be great. It's going to be fish.
And, oh, gosh.
Yeah, it's going to be fish.
Oh, my gosh.
So I have one final question, and this is going to be an all-skate. This is for everyone. You know, I do this with everyone I interview, but it's especially poignant this weekend because Pokemon Sword and Shield just came out. So with that in mind, could you each mention your favorite fish-type Pokemon?
I'll take the easy way out. Magikarp's my favorite because most people say it's worthless, but he's a big boy inside.
Well, if I knew more about Pokemon, I would definitely say Magikarp also. So.
What's the long one? Whiskash, I think, is that one? The like with like the little strings coming out of his face? He just looks so funny to me.
Is it Magikarp?
No, it's not Magikarp.
That's a different one.
I like Whiskash.
I guess Gyarados? I don't know. I actually really don't like fish. I'm not a huge fish person.
Fish?
I like animals that are like fluffy and like cute, so I'm like more drawn to those Pokemon.
How about Corsair? Does that count as a fish? Just like
coral. What about a favorite fluffy Pokemon?
I really don't remember the name of it, but it looks like a red panda. It's like standing on hind legs, and it has like a red hat. And it like just came out in the last like version.
Oh geez, then that's over my head too.
Not a real fan.
I honestly should know in advance. I should keep the Pokedex on me.
A lot of handbook.
So this is again Furious Fish Friends.
Yeah.
Okay, nailed it in one. We'll go around one more time. Just where can we find you folks online, social media wise?
Yeah, so we have a Twitter, we have our itch.io page, we have an Instagram, and we also have a press kit, which is like a fake website that you can find all our information, history, pictures, all the boring stuff.
All right, well, thank you so much. Thank you very much.
Yeah, of course, thank you.
Where have you been? Been searching all along.
Everyone who was demoing games at the Logan Theater wasn't just doing it to get notes on what they should do differently. They were actually also competing for a prize. The winning video game and board game each get booth space at C2E2, which is a big pop culture convention that happens annually here in Chicago. Last year's winners among them were Cold Calling, a game based on the telephone conversations between different Cold War leaders from across the world. And I've actually had these people on the podcast before, but I wanted to check back in with Tom and Cole over at Can't Get Enough Games about the progress on this project.
Without a sign, without grasping it, the real question to be asked, where have I been?
I couldn't get enough of Can't Get Enough Games. We're talking. It was good. I try.
I like it.
Just checking back in because it's been almost a year since you won the last one of these playtest events.
Yeah.
So
first off, you got a booth at C2E2. Can you tell me a little bit about how that went?
Yeah, you want to start?
Sure, yeah. It was really interesting. I've never done a con before. I have never been to C2E2 before for all 3 days, which was wild. It's actually not that different from an event like this. It's essentially playtesting. You're going to get a lot of people who you kind of just have to see if they understand what's going on in our weird, obtuse, dense game.
Yeah. We had a lot, you know, with a con, there's all sort of characters that come through. So you get people with, like, a lot of experience with games and some people who don't have, like, any. Or, like, older people and younger people react a lot differently. Like, it seems like a lot of the younger people didn't really like our game at all. They didn't seem to get any of the, like, political jokes and stuff like that.
Yeah, we were
like
really...
Cold War era.
We might not have known who any of those people
were. Yeah, they're like, who's this funny character?
On the other hand, we got one old guy. We the time phone in the game, like the time-traveling telephone in the game, we made a physical model of it out of, like, a rotary phone, and we put, like, a clock on the front and stuff, and we really liked the model, and we put it out on the table, and we got some old guy who just walked by, take one look at it, he's like... waste of a good phone and walk away. We've got some weird characters coming over. That's probably not even the worst of the people who came up.
Yeah.
Just strange people sometimes.
But it was fun.
It was good though.
We also met a lot of
people. Were super, you know, on board with it.
Yeah, yeah. I was surprised actually how many people were into it.
Now a lot else has happened since C2E2. Just can you tell me a little bit about how the game has evolved over this past year?
Yeah, so we've really tried to expand on the story of the game, for one thing. We had written the first, like, two levels of the game for the C2E2 demo. We've since written out the entire script of the game, which is about 20, 25 levels. And then we've also tried to expand on giving the player more agency during gameplay. I think when you played it, you saw a little bit of our new gadget system, which kind of... is going to make the gameplay a little more, like, choose what you want to do, I guess. You get a bunch of different gadgets that you can slot into the circuits on the switchboard, and each one is going to have a different unique effect. So it starts becoming almost like a tower defense game in some ways. Kind of you get to decide what your loadout is and what you use to make the level easier for yourself.
Nice. And it's not the only game that you guys have a hand in at this event, right? You're working on...
Yeah, so I also have a project that I started in school at DePaul called Captain's Hold. It's a third-person shooter where you play as a space pirate, and you swing on your hook hand and shoot aliens. It's a fun action game. It's not as crazy and obtuse as Cold Calling, but it's been a fun project to work on, and I'm glad both of them got in here. It's exciting. It feels weird. I'm like in between two booths. But yeah, it's fun.
I guess I shouldn't be surprised about so many people here come from DePaul, or like they're either there right now or they've come through that program.
Yeah. There's Sashimi Slammers over there, and then Luke Mayo's game, Dwelling, is also there. Those are the two I'm most aware of. But yeah, there's quite a few people here in DePaul, which is exciting.
Yeah.
Do you have a tentative timeline for seeing this game completed?
Oh, man.
We do. The short answer is we don't right now, but we have a shorter-term roadmap in place for a couple of events that we're going to be going to in the near future.
Oh, like what?
So we're going to the Akron, Ohio Art Museum in December for an art event there. They're having an exhibition about video games as modern art, I guess.
Yeah, which is interesting.
So Akron Art Museum's open world exhibition. And then in January, we are going to MAGFest in... right around Washington, D.C., so kind of fitting.
Yeah, so we're going to go there and, you know, explore the sites.
But we're looking to have a more complete demo of the first kind of chapter of our game. We have a very, very rough version here, so we're looking to kind of fill that out with all the content and all the features and the polish that we want. And then after that's done, we're hoping to move forward into kind of the rest of the story and the content of our game.
Have you discovered that this topic matter of this game has like opened doors maybe different than you had expected for like making a video game? Because like I feel like there are very few games that are like doing a fictional retelling of history in this way, except for like Command & Conquer Red Alert, which is...
I mean, you can speak more to that.
Man, I don't know if I can necessarily say it's opened a bunch of new doors for us. I don't know. I think it definitely grabs attention. It is one thing that the theme of the game is really doing for us. It's not something you see very often in games. Historical settings are not super common in games. Usually games tend to be more sci-fi or fantasy, but... especially like alternate history type things. It's not something that you see very often, especially in kind of a like a narrative-driven visual novel game.
Yeah.
I guess like the characters definitely are bringing in a lot of the best attention that we get. Like they tend to be pretty popular with people who play the game.
In terms of art and like just designing stuff, the framework that we set up has opened up a lot of fun design choices for like an image that could be like a video or something, or like a screenshot or a cutscene. We like use a photo in world instead of it, and like the level select screen is like a world map with all these little like bits from the story as each level. So it's like trying to keep everything physical in the world, and like all the menu and UI has been fun to think about, and like ways we can just make it more unique and interactive,
less,
instead of just
less gamey, I guess.
Yeah, instead of just like a UI that you'd see in any other game.
Yeah.
Two more questions. When will the dating aspects be rolled into the game?
Oh, man.
When can I date Khrushchev? When can I date Khrushchev?
Well, I don't know. Wow. Maybe he's taken. Well, by the, who knows what's going to happen? We're not going to do a dating sim, but I think in some ways we will start. The story is going to get a little more character-driven, at times maybe a little more emotional than it is right now,
yeah.
But we're not going to go super heavy into the, you know... dating Fidel Castro and all that, as much as that probably would go over well.
Yeah.
Lastly, since I've already asked you about Pokemon in the past, we'll keep it contemporary. Sword or Shield or neither?
Oh, I already bought Sword and I've been playing it this weekend, so I guess that's my pick then.
I haven't played a Pokemon game for a long time, but I guess I'll speak for Brett, who isn't here right now. He got... Shield, I believe. I can't remember now. I think he got Shield. And he's playing as the rabbit one.
The rabbit one. Gotcha.
That's good, though. You got inter-team trading.
Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah.
Guys, thank you so much. Where can people get updates on Cold Calling?
Yeah, so they can go to our Twitter, at Cold Calling Game, and at our website, which is can'tgetenoughgames.com.
Yeah. All right. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hiding both face and mind, all free for you to draw. I'm a chef.
Thirdly, or should I say maybe thirdly, I've got David Antignoli here. His game is a VR experience that takes place entirely in a men's restroom. I was all too briefly able to grab David's attention to talk with him about the wisdom he tries to impart to his students at Columbia College of Chicago as a professor of game design.
Revealing dark.
First thing I asked Mike about this game was TP.
Uh-huh.
And if the meaning was what I thought it was. But you told me there are actually multiple meanings to it.
Yeah, so originally the game started off as like I've been wanting to make like a demo in VR for a while, and I wanted to do something simple to learn, basically. So I had this idea of a bathroom. It's like a small environment, because normally the movement in VR is what I think is like the most difficult to deal with. So if you have a single room environment, you can just skip that and only do the natural walking around instead of the artificial navigation where you either teleport or whatever, right? So I knew I was going to do this bathroom game, and I thought it would be funny to make it about being in a bathroom. And so the original name was Terror Piss. And I was like, well, that's a little aggressive of a name. And I was talking to people, and they suggested TP. And I was like, wow, that's a brilliant name, because it does sort of allude to PT, which is obviously very popular, and also just toilet paper. So there's like a bathroom, immediate bathroom, like, sensibility as soon as you hear the title. So it lined up pretty well, I guess, on accident.
Now, in addition to being a game maker, you are a professor at Columbia University in Chicago, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. I'm a game design professor.
So do you normally take that step where you kind of, like, is the goal here to make something so that you can then try and impart that to students?
Well, yeah, I think it's good for them. You know, if I don't make stuff, they don't believe me that I'm a game developer, right? But, you know, it's real. I have to stay current. So that's why I wanted to do a virtual reality game. Like, I'd worked in the game industry for a number of years, but I've never done VR. And so I just wanted to explore that area and learn what I need to learn, I guess, and stay relevant in that space. But, yeah, I think, you know, it's like I consider myself a game developer and an instructor, and they really, those two areas synergize, so it's good to participate in both. Yeah.
I think this playtest night is a little bit unique because you have a lot of, like, game people involved in the gaming industry here, or students, but also I think there is a fair number of people who are just, like, walking in.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And, like, have you noticed any, like, surprising reactions or big reactions to the VR?
Yeah, I think, like, for us, we're by the concession stand, and so I think a lot of people who are just here to see a movie see this and try it, and some of them, you know, we've had people who have never tried any VR game before, and there's a little learning curve to figure out the controllers and stuff, but once they get into it, they definitely are very, like, they have big reactions, like you mentioned, because they've just never seen any of the VR stuff before, so that's fun.
There is one last question I wanted to ask you. This is a question I try and ask everyone who comes on the podcast, because I feel like there's a shared connection about Pokemon.
Oh, yeah.
Either about you played the Game Boy games, you played Go, or you watched the cartoon. So if there was one Pokemon you could have as a pet, which Pokemon would that be?
Wow. Well, you know, it's been a while since I played Pokemon, although I did just get the new one.
Sword
so
of Shield.
I picked my starter as the, what's it called, Swabble or Sobble.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I'll just go with that one to, like, stay consistent. But, you know, there's been a lot of Pokemon that I've liked over the years, but I had to stay with the new one to remember what it is.
Yeah. If you want people to stay in touch for future projects or just general musings, is there a spot they can do that online?
Yeah, nightcitygames.com. Yep.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cool. Thanks.
Fittingly, my last interview for the evening was two of David's students at Columbia College, Valerie Valhalla Villarreal and Robert Sandoval. Their game, Domesticate Hell, is still in development, but I think I got a good sense of what it's about from their demo, and I'm looking forward to see their progress. At playtest night, though, I just wanted to know a little bit more about the inspiration for this unique title. That's where I found an empty glass. Reflecting that's a truth. It's telling what's not to be told. You're from Columbia College.
Yes.
And I was talking with your professor, David.
Uh-huh.
Do you take classes directly from David here?
Yes. Yeah, David and Alex, who I don't know where he is right now, but he is also he's also a professor
yeah,
here.
David made the TP game at this
Yeah.
Events.
Which I hope to play before it before we close.
It's great. It's great. I can tell you for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, is it? How does it feel to have your professor here, like acting as your peer when you're doing showing off your game?
It's such a weird like feeling of excitement, honestly.
I almost feel like he's cooler than us.
Yeah,
he is cooler than us.
He is cooler by far. Like, there's no doubt about it.
He's not necessarily going to listen to this. You don't have to call him.
Oh, okay.
Okay, All right. No, it's nice. I worked with him for Indie Team Sprint, and he helped me make a game with that. It was nice to work almost one-on-one. I was in a group of, like, six people. And so we made a game called Capturing Fear.
Awesome. That's like that horror game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that got like over 100 downloads. So.
That's awesome.
Now, what was the inspiration for Domesticate Hell?
There weren't enough cute games out there, to be honest.
Enough like terrifyingly cute games.
Yeah, and so we really wanted to make a game that's cute and doesn't have to do with like fighting all the time. It's
yeah.
a game where you take care of pets. It's cute, it's fun, it's addicting.
Yeah, we actually got like a lot of inspiration from like Animal Crossing, kind of, where it's
yes.
like you're just kind of running around in like this little like cutesy kind of overworld sort of. We also kind of took like a little bit of the scariness from like the Don't Starve a little bit. I know that was at least some of our early concepts for like some of the monsters. And I don't know, just somewhere like along the way, you got this like amazing inspiration for like these like weird like little animals, like this like the fish that was like in one of the habitats that like flops around. I really like that design. It was just like a magic carp flopping around. It was amazing.
This does beg the question: What was cute about Hell? It's not. I'm interested. I want to learn more. That's.
I think what I liked. All right, one of my inspirations to cutify things, I'm going to coin that term, is there was a Littlest Pet Shop toy, and one of them is this pink tarantula with a bow. And, you know, tarantulas aren't cute, but somehow Littlest Pet Shop turned it into this cute toy. And so basically I would take something like a Cerberus, and I'm like, cats are cute. So I put it as an orange tabby cat with three heads. So, you know, you add something pre-existing that's cute, and then add on the hellish features.
I think it's such an interesting, just like a weird like juxtaposition, honestly. I think it's almost sort of like comical, where like you have this like terrifying like beast or something, but like it has these little like cute like tiny eyes or something, like a really tiny face or something. Just something that like really sets it off, and it just kind of, honestly, it kind of makes you laugh a little bit. And I think that's kind of what we were trying to go for.
I mean, I get that. It might be a three-headed beast that weeps lava from its mouth, but, you know, that's it loves you.
Yeah, exactly. That's as long as it loves you, that's what's important.
Yeah, that is what's important. You don't want it to tear your head off.
Yeah, exactly.
After tonight, what is the next step for the game?
I think we're just going to keep, like, working on it, just kind of fleshing it out and making sure that it's... You know, it plays well, it's polished.
Yeah, polished is very good.
And it's fun. We already have it up on itch.io, and we're just going to kind of keep releasing updates for it.
One of them will be evolutions. The pet will evolve in different forms.
Yeah.
So there'll be more domestication.
It will be bigger, it will be cuter, and it will be scarier.
One last question.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a shared communal bond with Pokemon across all players, either the cartoon or the Pokemon Go or the Game Boy games. So, if there is one Pokemon you believe deserves to be in Hell, which Pokemon would it be?
One in Hell.
Oh my god. I don't even know. Like, my mind just immediately went to, like, ghost Pokemon, just, like, a ghost Pokemon, and it's like, is that, like, too, like, predictable? Like... Is there something like Incineroar that would kind of be like more fitting, you know?
Alright, I'm blanking on the name of this one. It's that new, cute gray Pokemon. Yeah, it's got the creepy purple eyes that just stare soullessly. It starts with an E.
Bantam?
No, it's furry. It's fluffy. It can evolve into two different forms.
Oh.
Based on which direction you go. It's a newer one.
That's why I dip off.
Folded ears, I mean, I can see it perfectly in my head. It's got a white tip tail, gray, stands on its hind legs. Yep, that's the one. Esper. Yeah, I knew it started with an E.
Esper. Yeah, Esper. Oh, okay.
Esper belongs in hell for its dead stare.
Yeah.
Stares right through your soul.
Honestly, no. Yeah, you know what? Even though I just said it, I think Bennett would be pretty fitting, because that's like the lore behind it. It's always like the creepy lore, you know? The kind that you have to like watch all these YouTube videos about, where it's like, oh yes, the obscure like Pokedex entries and stuff. I think those kinds are what fit perfectly in hell.
Oh yeah, this thing belongs.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
The thing that gets like possessed by the soul of a child, it's like, yes, that would fit. But, like, yeah, it's also kind of cute, not gonna lie.
Lastly, where can people find updates on the game? How can we stay in touch?
Definitely on the itch.io page.
Mm-hmm. We also have a Tumblr, too. I believe it's domesticatehell.tumblr.com. We'll be posting updates there. We have a couple dev updates there already. Plus, you know, just...
just Google Domesticate Hell. It should always show up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will always be posting updates. Tumblr especially. You get the behind-the-scenes look, for sure.
Yep.
See what the gang's up to in the creation.
Yep. See what kind of weird new abominations we're in.
Yeah.
The cutest kind, of course. But yeah.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Heart in both face and mind, all free for you to draw. I'm a shapeshifter.
And that brings this week's episode of So Many Bits to a close. Big congratulations to Sashimi Slammers. They'll be showing their game off again at C2E2 because they are one of the two winners from the playtest night. Now, if you are hoping to hear more from all of these people, I would love to have them back on, so... you know, just let me know what you thought of this week's episode, and you can do so by emailing me at somanybitspodcast@gmail.com, like us on Facebook, we're So Many Bits on there, or follow on Twitter and Tumblr at So Many Bits. You can subscribe on iTunes, please rate and review, or download from Simplecast, from YouTube, or stream via Spotify. We play games, twitch.tv/somanybits, Wednesday and Thursday nights, 8 p.m. Central Time, Wednesdays for Magic the Gathering Online and MTG Arena, Thursdays for a variety of different games. Recently I've played Castlevania Symphony of the Night, Doki Doki Literature Club, Resident Evil 7, so a variety of different games. You can also find this podcast on nerdalogs.com alongside a bunch of other great nerdy podcasts. So thank you very much again for listening. Have a great summer.